Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and this is going to be a good one, don't you think, Stone?
Oh, I think so, and I have it on good authority that it is coffee day.
Really?
You didn't know that?
Did not know that.
But this is better than being highly caffeinated. We have two bright, passionate folks in the studio with us this morning. In a little while, we're going to get a chance to visit with the president of Commodore Consulting, Ms. Shanae Commodore. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio this afternoon, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the COO and Senior VP of Franchise Development, Mr. Roger Flynn. How you doing, man?
I'm doing fine. How are you today, Steve?
I'm doing well. I didn't have on my sheet the name of the company. First choice.
Franchise Concepts.
Right. Not the senior guy for the whole world, but for First Choice. Well, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you.
So can you tell us a little bit about First Choice? What are you guys up to?
Well, at First Choice Franchise Concepts, what we do is we search around the country for strong, independent business models who have a successful business model who want to grow, and they think that they would like to grow via the vehicle of franchising. Mm-hmm. We come in and we evaluate their business concept, their profitability, do a feasibility study. If it warrants, we will take them to market. We will build their franchise model from soup to nuts and then stay with them for a period of 3 years to help build their brand and sell their franchises for them.
So now, how do you identify what is a good candidate for franchising?
Well, we look for businesses that are unique, maybe one of a kind in a category or first to market.
Like yogurt?
Not really. You know, not looking for another yogurt shop or another sandwich shop. We like different and unique concepts that are one of a kind or that's pioneering a new way of doing business in a certain category.
Now, does it have to be business to consumer, or can it be business to business, or like
It can be any. A lot of people want to grow a business, but are limited on capital to go open more corporate locations. Mm-hmm. And if they have a successful and build your brand leverage that way.
Now, can you share maybe some success stories? Have you taken somebody that started out with just? I guess it was a mom and pop of some kind, right? It was their own
business? That's pretty much. Right now, one of the great success stories we have out of Knoxville, Tennessee, it's a craft beer market called the Casual Pint. Mm-hmm. Don't know any too many people that don't like good craft beer and guys that wouldn't want to own a – it's unique because it's first a category. It is a retail store with a bar inside, so you can actually have a pint on premises – work on your computer, watch a ball game. You can take a six-pack home with you because they have the retail section. You can fill up a growler. Very unique.
I guess it's like a coffee shop for beer?
There you go.
I like it.
I guess on this coffee day, imagine a Starbucks and replace the coffee with craft beer. When you have 500 selections of different craft beer and rotating tap wall, it makes for a very interesting destination place.
So now that was a situation where it was one person had one location and then they contact you and say, hey, we think this can catch on around the country.
No, he found them. They didn't contact him, right?
I can tell you like some beer.
It was a father and son team. They had two locations in Knoxville. Mm-hmm. They approached my partner and I about franchising. We looked at it and when we first walked in, we thought it was a franchise. They had done a very good job. And we built their franchise model. It took us about 8 or 9 months to get it all developed. We launched last November, and to date, we've sold 13 franchises for them in less than a year.
Wow.
And growing every month.
So now, they only had two locations. Is that how many you need in order to franchise something?
No, really, you just need one. Uh-huh. Since then, they've taken one of the locations, and they've turned it and flipped it to a franchise location.
So they have one, actually?
They have one now.
And then they have the rest are franchise?
Correct.
Do you find that to be a good strategy, or do you have to wait until I figured this out and have six of them in the market, and then I franchise?
No, I mean, you can if you've got a good business model and it's profitable, you can build a franchise system off of one location. Mm-hmm. Some people have more, but typically once they get started and they begin franchising and all the support required, we see that they want to sell corporate units and turn them into franchise units because they can't manage
because that's two different kind of businesses, right? One is I'm trying to get the customer to buy my stuff, and then the other one is I'm trying to get somebody to buy my store, right?
That's exactly right. Because what happens when you become a franchise owner of a franchise company, now your day-to-day role changes from trying to drive traffic into your existing store to now you are in a training support role with the franchisees. They become your clients now. So everything that you're doing now is to support them and help them grow their business for you.
So now is that where you really, that's your secret sauce, right? To teach them how to do that, because that's probably something they haven't been doing previously before interacting with you.
That's correct. And there's a lot of things that come up during the building of the model. We find the holes in the business and we shore them up. Mm-hmm. We have to build their training modules, their operations manuals. There's more than just the legal documents required in franchising. You know, a lot of businesses out there think that, oh, if I have a good franchise disclosure document, a franchise license agreement, I'm a franchise.
Right.
That's only a small part of a successful franchise system. You've got to have the back end. You've got to have the operations, the support, the training to sustain your franchisees and help them grow and be successful.
Now, where do you find the franchisees for your clients?
Well, hope. Oh, the franchisees.
Right. Like, so you find, like, you got this beer mm-hmm. company. What was it called?
The Casual Pint.
The Casual Pint. So they're like, great, I'm in. And then you do all that stuff. And then how do they find someone to run a Casual Pint here in town, here in Atlanta?
Just like every other franchise concept, you know, there's websites, there's social media, there's word of mouth, publicity and PR that gets people interested and want to investigate the franchise model. We vet them through a selection process, and if they meet the requirement and they have the investment level and want to enter business, then we'll award them a franchise.
Is that the easy part or is that the hard part? Where is that on the continuum?
If you've got a good, solid business model, that's kind of the easy part. People want to be a part of a successful, growing mm-hmm. system that's out there.
But when they're brand new and they only have one store operational, how do you convince them that this is something that's safe?
Well, that's why we look for concepts that are very successful financially as well, because we do what's called an item 19 in their franchise disclosure document, which is an earnings claim. Mm-hmm. A lot of franchises don't make an item 19. I mean, there's some units out there that's got, you know, up to 100 units of franchise that don't make an earnings claim. We come out with an earnings claim in the initial.
What's an earnings claim mean?
Earnings claim is franchising is governed by the FTC, mm-hmm. and the FTC says anything you're going to tell someone about the potential amount of money that they can make in a franchise model has to be disclosed in the item 19 of the FDD, the franchise disclosure document.
So some people say, I choose not to tell you anything.
That's correct. So the way they have to talk to other people to try to figure it out. So if you can make mm-hmm. a strong earnings claim with a successful business model, it makes selling the franchise a little bit easier.
So now, what is the earnings claim based on? What that one store did?
It can be based on a number of things. It can be based on gross sales. It can be based on percentages of profit and labor cost. We have to take their financials, take our CPAs, go through it, and determine what is the best earnings claim to make. Because all you can tell them is what you come up with through their disclosure of their
and so the financials. But this is something that's audited by an accounting firm.
It
can't just be, yeah, we made X.
No, it has to be verifiable.
Right.
So if anyone ever questions that earnings claim, there has to be backup data to prove that it is correct.
And then does that have to be done every year once you make that claim, or is that something that happens one time?
No, it's done. FDDs are updated annually, every April.
So, like, if you do it 1 year, then you kind of have to do it from that point forward, right?
Well, you could stop doing it if you chose to. But
then it looks like something's up, right?
And usually what happens is from year to year, you get more detailed FDD information for the item 19 because you have more units open. And now I can use the financials from the franchise units as well.
So now, are you a franchise yourself?
No, we are not. We are not a franchise. We are franchise development consultants.
Okay, so you're a consultant that helps these companies franchise.
That's correct.
Now, are you affiliated with any of the franchise brokers, or are you considered a franchise broker?
No, we're not a franchise broker. We're an actual development consultancy firm. We've got over 20 years of experience in the franchising industry, taking that knowledge and those years and put it into what we do in our business model.
Now, have you worked in the franchising business your whole career?
Yes.
And in what capacity?
My side of the business, I have always been in the franchise sales and development. side of the business. I've worked for Heavenly Ham, Honey Baked Ham, Athlete's Foot, some of the bigger names you may know over my career as a vice president of franchise sales.
So you were selling the franchise to the franchisee?
Correct. Correct.
So you work for the corporate or franchisor?
That was correct. That's what I've done. Now, my partner, on the other hand, he comes from more of an operational background. Mm-hmm. He has been a change specialist in the past with changing corporate divisions of big corporations for the board of directors and turning them into profitable divisions and replacing the senior staff and then moving on to the next project. He is a franchisor. He owns a franchise system himself. So not only is he on both sides of the fence, he understands the franchise model because he owns one firsthand.
And then, so what made you join forces and do this?
Actually, I was selling his franchises for him about 3 or 4 years ago in his franchise system, and we kept getting approached by people wanting our advice to help them build their franchise model, and we decided, you know what, let's just start our own consultancy instead of doing this for free. Let's get paid to do it. Right. So it's worked out pretty well.
So who's buying franchises in general? Is there a demographic, or does it depend on whether it's a yogurt franchise or an exercise franchise? Is it the retired exec? Is it the who's buying these things?
All of the above. Yeah. it really depends on the concept. For casual
pint, concept driven.
Yes, casual pint, for instance. I have doctors, I have airline mechanics, I have recent college graduates.
Well, Sinead's in. Her eyes lit up the minute you mentioned this concept, so Sinead's in, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Definitely.
If we just the licensing changed in Georgia, we'll be good. But it's all over the spectrum. Another concept we're rolling out actually this week is called Buttermilk Sky Pie Shops, and they are a scratch-made homemade pies. I mean, I'm telling you, it's the best pie you've ever put in your mouth. It takes you back to grandma's kitchen on the farm. I've got restaurant companies that own multiple Taco Bells and Steak and Shakes are looking to buy in, and I've got individuals as well that want to get in on this one because the margins are tremendous on this concept, and it's very exciting where we think that one's going to go.
Now, when you're talking to a person that's considering this, do they ask, like, do I have to operate it? Like, what is the kind of the temperature out there? Do people want to run the pie shop, or they want to buy a concept that's, I got some teenager running that thing? Like, how does that work?
It really depends on the person. If they're a corporation, they probably want to buy multiples, and they want to have a manager-driven model.
And do you have to figure that out for them, or they figure that out?
Well, we kind of figure that out in the vetting process of bringing in franchisees. Is it a model that lends itself for multiple ownership and multiple locations with manager driven, or is it a one-on-one owner operator type model? It really depends on the model that you're selling.
So how do you choose one over the other?
The business chooses what it is, and then we go out and find the appropriate candidates for it.
But what makes one business better to be sold at a corporate level and then find operators as opposed to one at a time?
It's the duplicatable processes within the business. For instance, the pie shop will be a great corporate-owned business that owner doesn't have to be on premises because of the procedures and the processes are in place. Casual pint can be done the same way. Other business models, like senior care business models, like my partner owns, those are hands-on business because they're all related to referral marketing. So the owner has to be very engaged in that type of business.
Mm-hmm. So that when the owner's engaged, that means the person who buys it is buying themselves a job, right?
That's pretty much right.
So now that's a different mentality than like this doctor who owns three casual pints. Right?
Correct. So you'll be looking for a different candidate when you're recruiting franchisees.
And then you help the doctor who wants to buy a three-pack put the right manager in place and the employees in place?
That's part of the franchise model that we build for the clients, the franchisors. So they will have all those in place in their operations manual, and their training and their policies and procedures will dictate what the owners need to do.
So at what point in the process, so let's say that Shanae and I, we're thinking about franchising Commodore Consulting.
Mm-hmm.
At what point in the process should we start reaching out to you and start to have a little bit of a conversation? Because we need to have some ducks in a row before we even bother you, right?
Well, at any time, you know, you tell your listeners, any time they feel like that might be an avenue, that's the time to reach out.
Earlier is better than
earlier is better later. Because what we do is the first thing we do will be an initial assessment, which is there's no cost for that. We'll sit down and go through your business model with you.
And that's where she cuts me.
Well, yeah, right?
That's, you got to drop the stone guy.
That's, where, that's where the dead weight gets dropped.
Right.
So we'll come in and we'll take a look at what you have and what your business looks like. If we feel like you might have something, then the next thing we do is what's called a feasibility study. It limits your exposure and your investment. That's kind of how we differ from a lot of the other consultants around the country. A lot of guys will take people in. It doesn't matter what you have. They'll build you a quick franchise model, charge you a lot of money, pat you on the back. Say,
like franchise in a box.
Yeah. Good luck. Hope you sell a lot of them. You hear these horror stories a lot. We have people come to us all the time who are already franchises. They've been a franchise for 3 years, and they've never sold the first one.
And, get out of here.
And when they,
ouch.
When we ask them, let's see all your stuff, you know, your manuals and this, they don't have anything. And that's a big problem. We build the back end first. So what we do is we do a feasibility study that is limits your exposure. You only pay for the feasibility study. And it takes about 90 days to do one. And it's about a 150-page report, chock full of benchmarking of the industry, flow charts, projection models, and this sort of thing. To determine if it's right. If it is, at the end of that feasibility, there's a go, no-go decision. And at that point, either us or the client can say, I'm ready to move forward or I don't want to move forward.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
So with your initial assessment, are you also providing the basic contract and legal documents that they may need to have for the franchise, particularly, especially getting started, like a non-disclosure agreement?
That comes in the actual engagement of building the model. Mm-hmm. The feasibility just takes a look at your business model to determine, is it feasible for franchising? If it's not, it will address what are the holes and what are the things that you need to shore up before it's time to franchise. Once it moves forward after feasibility, then the documents are built, the operations manuals are built, the training program, curriculum. We take a look at advertising, marketing, key messages, IT, you know, what you need as far as point-of-sale systems or tracking systems and CRMs. You know, we go pretty detailed and in-depth.
Now, what about, can you educate us a little bit on franchise brokers? Because we see a lot of them come through here that they are out there selling like a portfolio of franchises.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't charge unless the person buys one of the franchises?
Franchise brokers are basically a lead generation source for franchisors.
Mm-hmm.
What they do is they bring a candidate to the table. They give you an application. For that application as a franchisor, you're going to pay them a big percentage of your franchise
right,
fee.
Right, I heard that it's like could be half of whatever the franchise fee is.
Yeah, and the thing about mm-hmm. that is all you get as a franchisor or a franchise salesperson is an application. They don't sell it for you. They don't do anything. They just hand you this application, and if you sell it, you pay them as the franchisor.
So you as a consultant are recommending not to use that, or is that just one of many things you should be doing?
Some franchise systems use them and use them very well and generate a lot of business through them. That's a personal preference. Mm-hmm. When we sell franchises, we don't use them. We don't need to use them.
But so like when you're trying to – you have this concept for the Casual Pints,
mm-hmm.
you – I guess, create a persona or some sort of profile of what an ideal franchise candidate looks like.
That's correct.
And then you, together with the franchisor, come up with some sort of marketing strategy find
lots
of those people.
From LinkedIn to social media to Facebook to Google Ads, we have a internal social media company that works with us at First Choice, and we target those type of individuals through the internet to try to generate that interest.
And then you want them to raise their hand about franchising in general or about this one specific?
On that situation, we're going after people who want to invest in a business and leave corporate America and be an individual business owner, and they want to do it by buying a franchise.
Mm-hmm. So your first move is to get somebody who's interested in kind of leaving corporate America. That's a typical profile of a franchisee.
A lot of times, yes.
Is it? Are there people leaving a lot, or is this voluntarily leaving, or are they kind of getting laid off?
Both. You know, you get some people that want a little more long-term security and never know if they're going to have a job from 1 month to the next. Some are downsized. Some take severance packages and decide, you know what, I'm not going through this stress again. I'm going to do something for myself. Franchising is a great model to do that because everything is done for you. All you have to do is implement the model and follow the program. You don't have to go out and find all of these different components of the business. It's already done for you.
I tell you, this feasibility study, it sounds to me like it has standalone value. Like whether you end up franchising or not, to take the time to have some fresh eyes come in and help you examine your procedures, your operations, even if you decided eventually not to franchise, it seems to me like that would have standalone value. Is that an accurate assessment?
That's correct. The best way to describe the feasibility study is a business plan on steroids. it's very in depth, and you can take the feasibility study to the bank or to investors. We have angel investors that want to invest in franchise systems as we build them. Mm-hmm. And they tell us, bring us the feasibility study. We'll make our decision from it.
Wow. Nice. So now how long has First Choice been around?
We've been around 3 years.
And then so you have success stories already?
Yes. Yes.
And then is there any mistake you see businesses making who are thinking about franchising and it's not the right thing for them to be doing?
Yeah. A lot of businesses think that, you know what, I'm having a little bit of trouble. I'm not cash flowing properly. I'm going to go build a franchise model that will solve my problems. That's the wrong approach.
Get a bigger truck isn't a good strategy.
Yeah, no. you've got to have a funding plan to sustain a franchise system. It's not. I tell people it's not for the faint of heart because it's very detailed. If you do it right, you know you just can't go out and get a franchise in a box that you see on the internet advertised and you know spend a few thousand dollars in your franchise because it just doesn't work that way. It takes. We spend anywhere from 7 to 9 months building a model before we even launch it and start selling.
Mm-hmm. Now, with the craft brewers, were you able to – did you have to change anything dramatically, or were they pretty good?
No, we changed we tweaked a few things. We tweaked their point-of-sale system, some of the internal things in regards to coolers and things like that for less noise. But they were pretty solid.
Is that the exception, or is that's who you're looking for?
That's kind of who we're looking for. Well, you know, we've got one client out of Fort Wayne, Indiana, that we did a total redesign, name change. They were already a franchise system. We had to, I mean, it's just a night and day difference. Name change, design, product line, everything. I mean, it was a complete flip.
So you fix other people's bad franchise models?
We
is that a side business for you?
Sometimes. We don't like to do that very often. This particular store is the first of its kind memorial store in the United States. Mm. So it is it's a store. It's called Memories of You. You walk into the store, and it looks like a high-end gift shop, a high-end Hallmark, so to speak. But you can get everything in there from picture frames to jewelry, to garden stones, wind chimes, customized urns, customized caskets, to your pre-burial policies. I mean, you can get everything. It's a one-stop
so I
shop.
Can get that at the mall now? Is that what you're saying?
You could, yeah. You could. It could be at the mall. But when you're in there, you would never know that you get all those things because it's not. Their old format was a store full of caskets.
Right.
Oh. Which really turned a lot of people off.
Yeah, really?
Now you don't see one. They're hidden in the back and they're done on video monitors. But if you want a camouflage casket, we can get you
happen.
One. We can make it happen.
You notice he looked at me when he said, there's just something about me that exudes. I'm a camouflage guy.
So in your examples, I've heard you talk a lot about retail, mm-hmm. so to speak. So what other industries or products and services are you a part of? Do you have IT companies or do you have construction services?
Not right now. Our concepts we have, again, are the craft beer market, the pie shop, which puts us in the food, and we're looking at some other food concepts. We're looking at a sailor concept right now that we're in negotiations with. We have the memorial store that I mentioned, and we have one that will be launching at the end of October out of Marietta. It's called Warrior Pride Fitness, which is a CrossFit functional training, high-end exercise concept. It's amazing because you've got you get about 200 and some odd people a month come in to be tortured, and they pay premium top dollar for it.
I actually did that a few months ago. It was quite torturous.
And they have a 95% retention rate. They don't lose members.
That's great.
And it's pretty neat to see it.
So primarily B2C though, so far for you guys.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we'll evaluate anything that's out there.
Is B2B harder or easier in the franchise world, or just something you just haven't gotten around to yet?
The service side of that, it's just we just haven't come across the right concept yet. Hasn't approached us.
Mm-hmm.
We definitely turn down more people than we work with.
Is that post feasibility study or
no? That's pre.
Just in that conversation, you can tell.
And that first discovery evaluation, we'll tell pretty quick if they have something that's franchisable. Because, to be honest with you, we're not in the business of doing feasibility studies. Every feasibility study that we've done has turned into an engagement because it takes a lot of time to do one, a lot of staff, a lot of man hours, and we don't make a ton of money on them, so it's not something that, you know.
Right, you're not in the feasibility study
business. We're not in the feasibility study business. We're in the full development engagement business.
Right.
That's just the part of it.
Well, if somebody wanted to learn more, website for you guys?
Yes, they can go to firstchoicefranchiseconcepts.com.
And then so then they can contact you after that. There's enough information there.
Information on the website. There's a place to fill out information, and we'll contact them, and we go anywhere in the country.
And it's first spelled out FIRST.
Correct. Right. Spelled out first choice.
Great. All right. So you're going to hang out with us while we visit with our next guest?
You bet. I want to see what her business is all about.
Right. Well, we got a few bright glimmers there during your segment. We got a chance for her to ask a few questions, but we now get a chance to visit with Shanae Commodore. She's president with Commodore Consulting. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, we are delighted to have you. What are you consulting about? Who are you consulting to? What are you out there trying to do for folks?
My primary focus is working with businesses that want to grow revenue and remain sustainable by providing services and products to the federal government. I've been in that business for over 20 years. I actually started out in Dayton, Ohio, working for Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And then I moved to Atlanta, where I've spent some time working for CDC and DeKalb County. So I've been doing this ever since college.
So now, what are some of the challenges when you're working with the government?
Some of the challenges are that it's a much longer sales cycle. There are much more stringent requirements because there's over 3,000 federal regulations. So the challenges are when someone goes through a situation in their business, like, oh, I know, I want to win government work because they're going to pay me regardless of what's going on in the economy. And they don't realize the additional requirements, and they don't realize that the sales cycle for federal government is usually anywhere from 13 to 24 months. So where's the
before you get your first?
Yes, it could take that long.
Wow, that takes some patience.
Yeah, so that's why there are other strategies such as, you know, federal government vehicles or partnering with other companies. But if it's something that you truly devote your time to and grow the relationships, it's quite beneficial to diversify your company that way. The U.S. federal government is the largest buyer of goods and services in the entire world. Last year, they awarded over $500 billion of products and services. And that's anything from toys that the military families may need, healthcare services, food services for the government buildings, security. So, you know, anything that you can think of, the federal government provides, whether it's for Department of Defense or as we're seeing now with CDC and the need to educate and provide outreach about Ebola. So it's a lot.
So now when you're working with a client, they've never worked with the government before?
Some of them have not, no.
So now can you walk us through, like, we've never worked with the government.
So
how would you see if we're a good candidate for you guys, or help us find a way to possibly sell to the government?
Well, the ideal candidate has at least 2 years of experience working in the product or service that they want to provide. If they don't have that, they can at least document some experience from the past position that they may have held in corporate America. But the initial step would be to identify the product and services that you want to provide. There are NAICS codes, NAICS codes, that you can look up to a match.
So you do that, or I do that?
I do that. I work with the customers to do that. And then anyone that wants to work with the government has to register on SAM. It's a system, award management system.
So now, does that cost anything to
register? That's free. Companies can register on SAM themselves, and that's where you provide your contact information and identify the services for your company and agree to the standard federal regulations.
So now once I do that, then in 24 months I start getting government contracts.
Well, you have to you hope so, but you have to do your homework. You know, it's a license to hunt, but you have to do the work. So you have to build the relationships. All
but
government
with who?
With the government agencies. All government agencies have a small business office. They have outreach sessions and vendor outreach sessions about upcoming needs and, you know, requirements that they have. So you want to participate in those things.
But if I hire you, then you do that and I don't have to do that?
Yes, I can do that for you. But of course, I'll take you along because I want you to be successful in the process also. And you need to learn so that, you know, you'll be more successful that way.
So you can't represent me.
I can represent you, yes. And I do have companies that I work with and I represent at different events. But one of the other unique requirements with the federal government, you know, because they have requirements to work with various small business types, women-owned, disadvantaged, veteran-owned. The key to that is who has management and control of that business. Mm-hmm. So that's looked at in great detail by the government. So while I can represent the company and help build those relationships, the government has to see the past performance, and they have to see that that particular disadvantaged person or veteran
really works there. They can't
really
be like at the beach somewhere.
No, they can't. They have to be actually running the company, and they have to truly have control of the company and the expertise.
So is that a common mistake? Companies think that, oh, I'll just tell them that my wife's really the owner.
Yes, that is a common mistake.
She's never walked in the business.
Right. And strangely enough, you know, the government can find that out. There have been lawsuits and protests filed against businesses that don't really meet those requirements. Mm-hmm. It's also against the law. So there are civil and criminal,
right.
You know,
so
actions that you have to worry about.
Taking.
No, it's not.
So now, you got in this right out of college or during college you were involved in this?
Yes, it was a wonderful accident, one of my three major changes. yes, I actually started out as a pre-law and engineering student. Engineering proved to be too much math. I wanted more personal engagement in business. But while I was working as an accounting student, Wright-Patterson Medical Center asked the University of Dayton for some students that could help them audit the government contracts. So while I was there, it started out as a summer intern, but it grew to a cooperative job throughout my college experience. And then I grew to gain more experience throughout the entire contracts process.
So now you can take a company through just having an idea that they'd like to work with the government to actually having a contract with the government?
Yes. So I work with them. I conduct the marketing research and capture planning, which, you know, based on what you just said, is more like a feasibility analysis. Mm-hmm. And then I will work with them to identify, you know, 3 to 5 federal agencies to focus on, because those are the ones that spend the most money on those particular items, and identify people to meet with and conduct presentations and, you know, monitor for proposals or bids that may come out so that we can write a proposal response and eventually win work.
And what is the project you've got that you're most proud of?
Oh, there's one of them I would say was last year, where I worked with a small business, but I also as a practitioner, because I conduct work for government agencies too. And we partnered together and won a project with OPM to perform you know, and a review and assessment of their contract and procurement practices. And this was for security clearances. So that I'm pretty proud of that. The other thing that was very interesting is, you know, now we have emerging trends in technology. So I've been working with customers on renewable energy projects like wind turbines and solar systems and so forth. So I've also worked with people too, with companies on engineering to actually set up and create a regional test center on wind turbines.
Wow.
I want to know what the other two changes were. You thought I forgot about it. You said one or three changes. What are the other two changes?
The other change was that I actually was debating on, you know, whether becoming a doctor or a lawyer or an engineer. So I kind of went back, you know, back and forth.
Yeah, I didn't consider any of those
things. You did?
So what's your favorite part so far? What have you enjoyed the most?
What I've enjoyed so much is that I've met some of the most wonderful people. And in my line of work, I can really see the end where I'm benefiting the community or the nation as a whole by working to help the federal government secure these services, whether it's for national security and, you know, ballistics testing or, you know, emerging technologies with IT. Because most people don't realize the government conducts 60% of the new technology and research that happens. So a lot of the things that you see on the commercial side actually started out on the government side first. So I really like that. It's great relationships, and I'm always learning.
Now, when a company decides, you know what, I'm going to try to sell something to the government, and you know, it's one thing, I got to put my name on that list so now they know I exist, right? So that's step one.
Right.
But at some point, I'm going to have to write something like a proposal of some kind or fill out some sort of application that probably has like a million lines. And if I misspell one word, and then they're going to kick it back to me, and I got to wait another 6 months. Like, do you help navigate that? Because
I do. I help navigate that and identify the.
Isn't that super hard? Like, you can't just do that.
You would not be good at this.
A regular person
you would
can't do
no,
that.
No, it's very detail oriented, but that's the beauty of it. Remember, I wanted to be a lawyer, so I'm still able to conduct legal analysis and help from a legal perspective. I've even worked with some clients on contract terminations with the federal government. They have a right to terminate for convenience or default, but whether they do either one of those, as a company, you have a right to negotiate a termination proposal and negotiate what it's going to cost you, you know, to shut down and transition.
Because when you got the contract, you might have bought some stuff.
Exactly.
So now, how long is a typical contract?
It depends on what the item is. For, you know, if something as simple as providing office supplies, it could be until you've actually furnished the product, or it could be a blanket purchase agreement where maybe Health and Human Services wants you to provide all of their office supplies for maybe 3 years. So it really depends. Normally the largest contracts can be anywhere from 3 to 5 years. So it just really depends on what the service or product
is. Now, is there an opportunity for you to help Roger? Like, because he needs people to buy franchises. Is there something?
Well, I was actually going to ask her that question after the show today.
Right? Because isn't that's because, a place, right? Well, former military?
If she has a connection with the VA, I know they have programs for disabled vets where
they
fund so much money
for
them to go out and invest in a business. And actually, one of the casual pint closes this week is with two Army veterans.
Oh, nice.
One's a disabled vet, one's still active, an active captain for Huntsville, Alabama. So, we love military. Military guys make great franchisees.
Is that true? That's just a rule of thumb?
It's because they will follow the model.
Right. It's, you know,
discipline's
government.
Discipline's not an issue, right? They'll show up.
They don't try to reinvent the wheel.
It's a lot about policies and procedures and, you know, ethics and compliance. And you're right. Normally with the military background, it seems to work a little more efficiently.
But so is that a client? Like, could that be somebody you would work with is to help him find military? Or is that outside of the scope of what you do?
No, that's something that I'd be able to do. You know, usually the government buys in maybe two key sectors, defense requirements, the Department of Defense, Army, Navy, Air Force, and then you have your civilian agencies like HUD, Housing and Urban Development, the VA, the Social Security Office. So there's two, you know, very different dynamics there, but they all have needs. And if you think about any businesses or you think about all of the services that the United States offers and what it takes to run run those, you can see where the possibility is, I mean, pretty much limitless, you know, with the right services and products. And while you can, you know, look for bids to be put out and identify, it's better to have the relationships, because the other advantage with the federal government is that you can present an unsolicited proposal. So if you have a unique solution.
Oh. I thought you always had to reply to one of their.
No, no. And if you have a unique
solution.
See how solution,
much we don't. You don't know what don't know you anything. Don't know. Exactly. And there's a lot of people that don't
That's
know what
you
don't know.
You
right.
Hire someone.
You can present that. And I do work with my my companies, my customers, as that's another alternative. Don't just wait for it. If you have a unique solution with a value and a benefit, you know, let's go to that particular agency, whether it's Department of Energy or the CIA or whomever, and put something together and present that.
I want to do something for the CIA. Well, so we've talked a lot here in the last several minutes about someone who really knows or thinks they want to go after government-related contracts. But do you find yourself just walking around in general and saying, man, that business really ought to think about going after a government contract? And you think, man, I bet it's not even on their radar. Do you find
right. Sometimes I do. And that's one of the key initiatives that I've had this year and next year, which is why I put together the conference, the two-day conference that I have for Business Basics, so that they understand, you know, that this is a possibility for you. This is a realistic possibility for you. Even though the sales cycle is longer, when you talk about franchising and you talk about sustainability, you want to show revenue. You want to show the ability to maintain good finances. And what better way to do that than to show residual income through a long-term contract? Mm-hmm. So it's definitely a good option. And I do. I think about that.
I bet often. You do constantly.
So how do people kind of find out, just through your website about
Yes, they can find out through my website at www.commodoreconsulting.com. I'm also on Twitter at Commodore C, and I'm on LinkedIn also under my full name, Shanae Commodore.
And then who would be the perfect client for you? What is the pain that they're having that they should contact you?
The perfect candidate for me would be someone with at least 2 years of experience.
So they have a business that's like kind right. of real business.
Not just an right. idea.
Not an idea.
Like, you know, I was
right,
thinking
because
over the
you've got to be able to.
Right.
It's wonderful to win, but the question is, can
deliver.
You afford to
right.
win? And right. with the federal government, uh-huh. yeah. and you submit an invoice, it could take you 30 to 45 days to get paid.
Right.
Within that time, you've had to buy supplies, you've had to
right.
pay people. So can you afford to do that? So, you know, I analyze that too. That's why I say I will work with individuals or solopreneurs as long as they understand that there's some additional steps they're going to have to take before they're really able to bid.
And then and you can help them through the whole process, filling out
yes,
the forms and all that stuff.
Yes, I can help them through the process and fill
and
out
then
the forms.
If you were going to give advice to somebody, is there some government agencies that they should get to know right now before working with you?
Definitely. I would say, you know, GSA is a long-term contract where the GSA reviews the commercial companies and identifies them for financial stability and services. And then they are awarded a long-term contract for those product and services at a pre-approved discounted price. So it's another license to hunt, but it shortens the sales cycle. Mm-hmm. So they also provide free training on doing business with the government.
So the GSA?
I would definitely go to GSA.
That's a government. What
yes.
does that say for?
That's General Services Administration.
Uh-huh.
And that webpage is www.gsa.gov.
And then you go there and you say, I'm a first time.
Well, you'll see a link for training. There's links on how to do business with the federal government,
right.
Webinars that you can sign up. They also have a list of events for vendor outreach sessions. I would also suggest NCMA, the National Contract Management Association. That's a group that's dear to my heart because that's where I get my training from also, and I participate there. They have some really good training also, and that's www.ncmahq.org. And then my company also provides training.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show today.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.